Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Labor on Kamala, agreement to end the strike at Bath Ironworks. And today on the show, the latest from Policy Matters Ohio and the United Auto Workers. Good afternoon and welcome to the Thursday, August 13th edition of America's Workforce. Available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify, online at awfradio.com. Two guests on the show today. Caitlin Johnson will be joining us. Caitlin is the Director of Communications for Policy Matters Ohio. She's got a pretty extensive progressive background. She led environmental justice campaigns for the Ohio Organizing Collaborative. She formed Communities United for Responsible Energy. She was also involved in promoting public transit. She worked as a journalist for ABCnews.com. CBSNews.com. She was in National Public Radio, and she's produced a number of documentaries dealing with working families and the poor. And today, she is going to talk about reimagining Appalachia. This is a coalition of 60 organizations from Ohio, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Kentucky, and it includes labor, policy experts, and community leaders. The whole idea here is to make sure that no matter what we look like or the size of our bank account, everyone who lives here can have a good job, is cared for, and can raise a family. So there's a future. That's what it's all about. Caitlin writes, for too long we have left corporate CEOs and a handful of politicians divide us based on what we look like or where we came from. So we'll look the other way while they make loved ones sick by polluting our air and our water. That's pretty much what we're going to talk about on the show today. It's a campaign. Again, we're talking 60 organizations, and they're all banding together to reimagine Appalachia. If you ever get an opportunity, just drive through those parts. You'd be shocked. You'd be shocked to think that this is the United States of America. It's almost like going back into time, and the poverty is just off the charts. Really sad. Our second guest this afternoon is Desiree Hoffman on behalf of the United Auto Workers, one of the many proud sponsors of America's workforce. And she is going to zero in on the stimulus package that seems to be going nowhere, absolutely nowhere. I mean, it ran out at the end of July. People are hurting. We're talking about the $600 a week unemployment checks now whittled down to, I don't know, 200, 300, 400. The states are saying they don't have enough money to help out, but the two sides are far apart. The Democrats did cave a bit. Originally, they offered a $3.2 trillion package. This was back in May. The Republicans, several weeks ago, came up with what they called the HEALS Act, and that's $1 trillion. Now, the Democrats have compromised. They shaved off over $1 trillion, so they're down to $2 trillion, but still, No budge by the GOP. And like I said, a lot of people are hurting right now. So Desiree is going to compare the two, what they contain, what they don't contain. And she'll be our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Well, Joe Biden, the Democratic Party's candidate for the presidency, officially put an end this week to the long wait over who would be his vice president. Well, as you probably know by now, the junior senator from California, Kamala Harris, is the second African-American woman and the first South Asian American senator in history. Now, Harris has a largely positive record on labor, including her introduction of the National Domestic Workers Bill of Rights, along with Washington Representative Pramila Jayapal, And apparently, according to the AFL-CIO, she also is in support of positions for persons with disabilities in the White House and other federal agencies, and support for the classification of rideshare drivers as employees rather than independent contractors. And what's interesting about this, she is supporting the workers despite the fact that her brother-in-law is Uber's chief legal officer. That has to bring some interesting family discussions. And we have a statement here from Rich Fiesta, executive director of the Alliance for Retired Americans, who we feature each and every month here on America's Workforce. He said Vice President Biden's selection of Senator Harris is a positive sign for seniors. And this is a quote. Senator Harris has earned a 100% lifetime score in the Alliance for Retired Americans annual congressional voting record. If she's elected, retirees should feel confident that she will work to protect and expand their earned Social Security and Medicare benefits. In contrast, Vice President Mike Pence earned a dismal 3% lifetime score when he served in the U.S. House of Representatives for his votes against retirees' best interests. Time and again, President Trump and Vice President Pence have failed to protect older Americans, even going so far as to vow to defund Social Security by repealing the payroll tax, possibly permanently. Trump said that if he gets reelected. So Rich summed it up by saying the Alliance's 4.4 million members are paying very close attention to the presidential race and looking to support a pro-retiree team in the White House. And here's a statement from Rich Trumka, who is president of the Labor Federation. He said Kamala Harris had spent her entire career tackling some of the most critical issues facing working families. As attorney general in California, she held big banks accountable in the wake of the housing crisis, prosecuted employers for stealing our wages, and advanced criminal justice reform. As a U.S. senator, she has achieved a perfect AFL-CIO lifetime score, working to create a fairer process for forming a union and protecting our health and retirement security. We look forward to electing Joe Biden and Kamala Harris as America's next president and vice president. So that's the labor point of view, which we try to make sure you understand here on America's Workforce. Well, we got some good news concerning labor. The machinists, we're talking Local S6, their negotiating committee, which represents more than 4,300 shipbuilders at Bath Iron Works in Maine, has reached a tentative contract agreement with the company, a General Dynamics subsidiary that builds ships for the U.S. Navy. The agreement keeps existing subcontracting language and protects seniority, the top issues that forced 87% of Local S6's members to reject the previous contract. The union's negotiating committee is unanimously recommending a tentative three-year agreement, which was reached last week. Got a comment here from Robert Martinez Jr. He is the international president of the machinists. He said, I am so proud of our local and their membership for standing strong to protect their families and their collective bargaining agreement. I look forward to our membership doing what they do best, building the best ships in the world for the U.S. Navy. He went on to say, I'd like to extend my appreciation to IAM Grand Lodge Representative Dave Sullivan, the Local S6 leadership and the negotiating committee, District 4 representatives, and all the allies that we had in this fight. The IAM received significant public support during the strike, especially from several representatives, Jared Golden and Shelley Pingree from Maine. Local S6 members will receive the contract in the mail and vote online and over the phone in the next coming weeks. So this is a strike. This began back in June, and it did attract national attention and obviously a whole lot of community support. Speaking of community members of the Charleston Central Labor Council, which is part of the South Carolina AFL-CIO, the Greater Charleston Chapter, the A. Philip Randolph Institute and their community allies teamed up last Thursday to provide food relief for some dozens of union families in that area. Labor Council President April Lott, who's a member of the American Federation of Government Employees, said the following: "We were able to serve approximately 100 families with meat, milk, cheese, fruits, vegetables. Last week's food relief distribution was the third of six such events planned in Charleston, and it was staged at the Longshoremen's Hall down there." I think you're going to see a whole lot more of that, especially if the two sides in Washington don't come together and provide some relief for the millions of people that are struggling right now. No doubt about that. All right, we have to take a break. You're listening to America's Workforce, our segment with Policy Matters Ohio, coming up next. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. A half million strong, we're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
The Food and Drug Administration has recently reported that the heartburn medication Zantac is linked to cancer. Zantac has been linked to a variety of cancers, which include bladder, colorectal, kidney, liver, pancreatic, and stomach. So if you or a loved one took Zantac and developed any of these types of cancer, you need to call Kelly and Ferraro. 216-575-0777. Let me repeat that number. 216-575-0777 for a free case review. You may be entitled to compensation from the drug manufacturer.
I didn't want to talk. She just sat with me. That was all I really needed.
We got back. One day he called me out of the blue. And it's comforting to know that I always can count on him to have my back.
She called me from time to time. I really didn't think I needed any help.
It took me from being really depressed to feeling like somebody cared. It gave me some hope. Just that one text.
Be there. Your call. Your presence. Your words. Your support. Be there and help save a life. Learn more about preventing suicide at VeteransCrisisLine.net.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Welcome back to America's Workforce. You can find us online at awfradio.com, and our Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. Follow us right there, AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number one. Welcome back to the show. It's been a while. Caitlin Johnson is her name, and she handles communications for a wonderful organization, Policy Matters Ohio. Policy Matters Ohio. .org is a website, and today we're actually going outside of Ohio. We're covering Ohio, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Kentucky, which make up a big chunk of Appalachia. And today's topic is reimagining Appalachia, which is a coalition of 60 organizations from those four states, and laborers included. Hey, Caitlin, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us once again here on America's Workforce.
Oh, hi. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
So, talk to me about this this coalition here, and I referenced Appalachia at the top of the show. I mean, this is a part of America that so many people, politicians, CEOs, I guess they turn a blind eye to for so many years. It's almost like they're stuck back in time. They haven't progressed forward. So, I would imagine this campaign is trying to change all that. Explain the details to me.
Totally. Yeah, well, I mean, Appalachia, of course, is a huge region in the nation. It stretches all the way up from New York, parts of New York State, down to Mississippi and Alabama. It's huge. And we're focusing on just part of it, Ohio, Kentucky, and West Virginia, and Pennsylvania, like you said. You know, Ohio has about, I think there's about 30 counties in Ohio that are considered Appalachian counties. And, you know, the folks in Appalachia are really amazing people who are portrayed often unfairly in the media, have a lot of unfair stereotypes applied to them. In my past job before Policy Matters, I did some community organizing in some Ohio Appalachian counties, Columbiana County, Carroll County. And what I encountered there was people who are hardworking, who deeply, deeply care about their community. I encounter communities that are much more diverse than what people assume, and places where people are just fighting every day for a better life for themselves and their family. So, and Reimagine Appalachia is really all about that. We know in our coalition that for too long, big energy companies have dominated the economy and the politics. We've seen that very clearly with what just happened in Ohio with the HB6 scandal that's going on right now. But big energy companies have dominated the economy, have dominated the political process, really to the detriment of working people, of our health, of our environment. And we're saying that there's a different way. There's a new way forward. We don't have to choose between having good jobs with good benefits and being healthy and having a healthy environment. And that's what Reimagine Appalachia is all about. We're calling on our federal policymakers as they're debating these big packages, these big funding packages, to make sure that the public resources are directed at Appalachia, especially considering how much that region has given to the rest of the country for so long.
When you say these funding packages, what specifically you're talking about? I know there's, well, we had the CARES Act. They're debating stimulus money. I know there's some infrastructure packages that have passed in the House. Can you be a little more specific on what's going to be directed toward that region?
Sure. Well, of course, there's the short-term stuff to deal with the COVID crisis and the recession it's causing. Of course, at Policy Matters, we've been advocating for more federal funding, more flexible federal funding for state and local governments, and including more funding for broadband infrastructure, which is crucial right now, especially for rural communities and then communities in cities as well, where people might not have the money or the means to have the internet connection they need to either work from home or to have their kids attend classes remotely. So that's one example of what the COVID packages could do in the short term that could benefit the Appalachian region. But then in the longer term, there are other pieces of legislation. One bill is called the Reclaim Act, which is all about putting people to work, doing essentially that reclaiming abandoned mines, old abandoned mines, and cleaning it up and restoring the land. Great way to make communities safer and more vibrant, and also put people to work in good jobs. And the thing about our coalition, what we're calling for that is a little unique, is we're not just saying, you know, put people to work. We're saying put people to work, and if there are federal projects that have federal dollars, our policymakers can attach some strings, attach some conditions to those projects and say, you know what, if you're going to have a public project, if you're going to have public dollars, you're going to have to hire union workers. And you're going to have to hire black and brown workers, and you're going to have to hire women, and you're going to have to hire people who work in the fossil fuel industry who are now displaced because coal plants have been closing or mining is declining. So that's really a big part of it, just making sure that these federal projects that are out there are putting or are benefiting everyone, really benefiting the entire community in a broad way.
Yeah. You know, Caitlin, when you talk about Appalachia or Appalachia, however you want to pronounce it, the first thing that comes to mind is coal mining. You touched on that. And I'm just wondering, you know, there's a lot of politicians, including the guy in the White House, who said those jobs are going to come back. And I'm just wondering, because there's so many, jobs that used to be good paying jobs in coal that have disappeared. But I'm just wondering, is any of that happening in that area right now? I mean, is there any glimmer of hope for some of those jobs, or are they pretty much gone for good?
You know, when I did community organizing in that area, and I talked to folks who work in the industry and or folks who have family members that work in the industry, one of the things that I heard from people was that the coal that they're pulling out of the ground is not the same coal that they used to pull out of the ground 50 years ago. We're tapping it out. It's a finite resource. So even if we allow our federal policymakers to loosen every regulation and loosen every environmental protection, at some point, the resource is going to be exhausted. It took millions of years to make coal, and it doesn't just come back like that. So to think that simply by cutting safety protections for workers and communities that all of a sudden you're going to have a resurgence of coal, it's just not true. It doesn't stand up to logic. That doesn't mean that we can leave the communities behind, because we know that coal miners and the communities where coal mining was happening, they gave so much to our country for so long. It was because of their work, because of their labor, because of their sacrifices that we were able to have our industrial revolution, that we're able to power our homes, that we're able to have the good lives that we have. So just because coal might be declining and it might be reaching the end of its time doesn't mean that we can just say, write the people off. And I think somewhere along the line, the message got muddled, and that's what people started hearing. And we're saying no. And no, we have not forgotten about you. We care about you. And we want to make sure that you and your family are set up for success in the long term. And we want to make sure that you can have a good job with good benefits and that you can pass a good life on to your children and that your children can come back to the region and live there and work there and thrive.
Yeah. Well, you talk about repurposing these coal plants. Are you talking about a different kind of energy? I mean, you know, what's really hot right now is this, no pun intended, is like natural gas, those gas-fired power plants. Is that something that's on the agenda? Because, you know, these are people with an industrial background. These are people that get their hands dirty. And they want, and in those jobs, they're good-paying jobs. The coal mining jobs were good jobs at one time in America. You can support a family. But I'm just wondering, going forward here, what do you see for that region?
For sure. And yeah, you're absolutely right. Natural gas has been a big part of the picture right now. But we're thinking even, you know, even beyond that, coming up with ways to base the economy of the region on jobs that are really going to stick around, not on jobs that are dependent on something that gets pulled out of the ground and then leaves the region and goes away. And not to diminish the jobs that have been created and the work that people are doing, but we're trying to think about something that's even longer term than that. And when we talk about repurposing the coal plants or repurposing old mines, we're not really talking about turning them into natural gas plants. You know, one of the ideas the folks who are doing the research and doing the analysis lift up in the policy blueprint that we released last month was this idea of eco-industrial hubs, which is not something that I really knew much about. But looking into it, it's a really cool idea. It's like taking these big facilities and building a lot of businesses there who are kind of in a symbiotic relationship. So if one factory is generating waste, another factory could use that waste as its power, you know, or use the excess heat that the factory is emitting to power its own operations. Or if one factory is producing like fly ash, another factory could take that fly ash and turn it into coating for roads. You know, there's all sorts of really cool things that businesses can work together on, ways that they can conserve water, And that's what we're really talking about. These eco-industrial hubs are happening in other parts of the world. I realized doing some research, and you know, we can do it too. And Appalachia can lead the way.
Interesting. Eco-industrial parks. Yeah, definitely have to look into that. All right, I have to take a quick break. Caitlin Johnson joining us on our live line on behalf of Policy Matters Ohio, policymattersohio.org for more information. Also, Desiree Hoffman will be joining us. She's going to compare and contrast the HEROES Act, which was passed by the House, and the HEALS Act, which the Senate Republicans are trying to run through to help working Americans in the middle of a pandemic. It's all part of America's Workforce. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
The AFL-CIO is a proud sponsor of America's Workforce Radio. United by efforts to raise wages, listeners to this show and workers all across America are beginning to turn a corner and drive the economic debate. The AFL-CIO is comprised of 12.5 million working people from 56 unions, but we stand with and fight for everyone who is working for a better life. For more information about our raising wages agenda, go to AFLCIO.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
Chris LaGrange here, host of UCOM Live with Chris LaGrange. News, talk, sports, and workforce politics. The fastest growing podcast on, in, and around the internet. Join us live every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and Twitter with archives on UCOMLive.com. Our loud and colorful panelists bring you current events like no other. So follow and subscribe today wherever great podcasts are found.
When my landlord said rent could be cheaper if we were friends with benefits, you know, I'd heard of sexual harassment in the workplace, but at home?
That is housing discrimination based on sex.
I'm legally blind. A landlord recently said that he didn't think I'd be able to take care of an apartment on my own and refused to rent to me.
That is also housing discrimination based on disability.
A real estate agent said that we'd be more comfortable living in a different neighborhood with people like us. Luckily, we know our rights. It's illegal to steer prospective homeowners away from or to certain neighborhoods based on race or national origin.
If you think you've been discriminated against because of your sex, disability, national origin, race, color, religion, or familial status, call the HUD hotline, 1-800-669-9777, or go to hud.gov/fairhousing. Fair housing is your right. Use it. A public service message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And welcome back to America's Workforce. Don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify. Please subscribe to our podcast, and we would appreciate a good rating, a 5-star rating. Caitlin, you hear that? Listen to us on...
Yes.
On a national podcast here on America's Workforce, and we've been supporting you. You can support us now, so we would definitely appreciate that. We have a national audience, and we're talking about a national story here, Reimagining Appalachia, which is a coalition of 60 organizations from Ohio, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, as well as Kentucky, including labor, policy experts, community leaders. So the whole idea here is to take a look at a chunk of America that has been ignored for years. And there's a couple things I want to throw at you here. Number one is you mentioned like broadband. I'm thinking education for one. And it seems like and think about this, too. If the industry leaves, which they did, we talked in the first segment about the coal mining operations. Many of them are in bankruptcy court now. I mean, when they're gone, they don't support the community. The schools fail. I mean, there is so much to address here. I'm just wondering. And you said that there's some pieces of legislation and all that. But. Where do we start with all of this, Caitlin? I mean, it seems like we need to get everybody together. It takes a village, as they often say, to kind of turn this around. And this is a big chunk of America that's been ignored. We're in a political season right now. Is anybody specifically talking about this in Washington right now? What are you hearing?
You know, not enough. Of course, there's the Reclaim Act that we want to see passed, and it hasn't been passed yet. And mentioned that before, and that's the act to, you know, put people to work, remediating abandoned mine properties. We have folks right now, we have coal companies asking, and this is talking a little bit about big coal corporations, big corporations in general, you know, taking the wealth out of communities and leaving people behind holding the bag. You know, right now yeah. we're in the middle of a pandemic that's wreaking havoc on people's lungs, especially. And as black lung claims are going up, and black lung claims are going up because, you know, miners who were operating for years are now starting to feel the effects of that in a deeper way. So just as black lung claims are going up, you know, you have coal companies asking policymakers to cut the tax that funds a black lung trust that makes sure people who sacrificed for us are taken care of. And what we have to do to start, like you said, is we need to direct public resources into this region to put people to work in good jobs, to build out the infrastructure that's needed to make sure that kids can get broadband access for their education. It's really a question of directing resources at communities rather than big CEOs, big corporations, tax cuts and loopholes and all the rest of it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, when you talk about broadband, that reminds me, and I'm sure you've heard about the digital divide in America. And we're seeing that firsthand now, especially in the middle of the pandemic, where you have school systems that cannot afford internet access so they can learn outside the classroom. And isn't a big chunk of Appalachia like that? They're not connected to the globe right now. Is that the picture that I'm seeing right now?
Absolutely. It's a huge problem. It's a huge problem in Appalachia. I mean, it's a problem in Cleveland, too, where I'm at, in certain communities. But, you know, I mentioned before I used to spend some time down organizing in the Ohio Valley region in Ohio. And as soon as I got into Carroll County, I tell you, like, I had no service whatsoever. And that's a problem. That's a problem if you're expecting kids to learn from home. It's a problem just in general to be able to, even not in COVID times, to be able to be connected with the world, to email, to do Zoom calls, to do whatever. But more than ever right now, it's crucial. And we know that this pandemic, until we get a vaccine, it's going to be here for a while. So we have to be directing our federal resources at building out this broadband. And the good news is we can do that, get kids connected, make education better, and put people to work. It's a win-win.
Yeah, yeah. Well, infrastructure is that's a game starter right there. I can't tell you how many times we've talked on this show what we need to do. And I mean, the energy grid, the power lines in America, I could get into the roads and the bridges. I mean, there's so much that needs to be done. And those are good jobs. They're really good right. jobs. And if you drive through that area, it's scary. It's scary. It's like a third world country in some of those parts there. So there's a lot of work to do. I just wish we can get people together. You know, we have divisions all over. Obviously, Congress is divided. Labor is divided on this, too. There's people in organized labor that are still pushing for those coal mining jobs and the fossil fuel jobs. And then you have the other side that want the Green New Deal. So there's a lot of people that have to come together. And I guess my final question here is, do you see that happening? Do you see some collect? I know you got this group already going with 60 organizations, but we're going to need more than that. What do you see down the road?
Yeah, I think it is, you know, and I think the really great thing about the Reimagine Appalachia Coalition is that we're talking about what we're for and not what we're against. Like, we're putting out a vision, and it's a vision where we want to bring everybody along. We're, you know, if you worked in coal, great, join us. You know, if you're working in natural gas right now, fine, join us, because we're talking about something for the long term. And so we really think that we're building a big umbrella, a big tent where everybody's welcome. And, you know, that's our message. That's what we're going out there. We're talking about what we're for. We're not talking about what we're against. And I think that's a better way to bring people in You know, I think part of the division we see in this country is because everybody's leading with no, and we're leading with yes. Like, yes, yeah. You can do this. So, yeah, I think we're going to keep out there. We're going to keep drumming that message home. And, you know, I was amazed by how quickly people were signing on to the blueprint. And I think it's just going to keep going.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I hear you loud and clear about people saying no. They say, well, we can't afford to do that kind of thing. Well, guess what? We can't afford not to do this, really,
Absolutely. When
you take a look at the whole picture. All right, Caitlin, great job. Thank you so much for joining us. Caitlin Johnson, Director of Communications for Policy Matters Ohio. You want to get some more information? Great work, policymattersohio.org. You take care, keep up the fight, and be safe, okay?
Yeah, you too. Thank you so much for having me.
You got it. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Desiree Hoffman, on behalf of the United Auto Workers, we're going to compare and contrast two pieces of legislation to help workers in all of America. That's next right here on America's Workforce.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output, a half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
One in three adults has prediabetes. One in three. That means it could be you, your football buddy. Your football buddy. Or you, your best man, your worst man. You, your dog walker, your cat jogger. While one in three adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. That's doihaveprediabetes.org.
Wait, did they just say one in three adults has prediabetes? That's 33.33333% of adults. That means it could be me, my boss, or my boss's boss, or me, my favorite sister, or my other sister. That's seven members of my 21-person romantic book club. Wait, the one in three could be me, my karaoke partner Carol, or my karaoke enemy Jeff. I'm going to take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its pre-diabetes awareness partners.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And welcome back to America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify, online at awfradio.com. Before we get to Desiree Hoffman on behalf of the UAW, got some good stories here about UAW members, whether they are in working in academics, looking for a drug to fight the deadly virus, an auto worker making a quick pivot to manufacture ventilators, masks, or shields, a maintenance worker disinfecting the plant, or even a healthcare worker making sure the sick can receive some type of treatment. UAW members are courageously doing what they can to battle COVID-19. So the union recently profiled some of their members on the front lines. For one, Dave Gordon Dave is an associate researcher at the University of California, San Francisco. He's a member of UAW Local 5810. And Dave is racing to find a treatment for COVID-19. Then there's Bob Nadler. Bob is working 12-hour days to produce face shields as a dye repairer and member of UAW Local 245. That's in Michigan. Sandy Welch, member of UAW Local 95 and a medical transcriptionist in Wisconsin, continues to go to work as at a medical clinic despite being at high risk for complications from the virus because she has pre-existing conditions. Talk about being brave here. Just a few of the thousands of union members who are playing their part to keep our country safe and protect our communities. Once again, union brothers and sisters going the distance to help all Americans. Great stuff. UAW.org for more information. Let's go to our live line. Speaking of a UAW member working hard, Desiree Hoffman works legislatively for the UAW, and she's trying to figure out what our Congress is doing to help working Americans because those unemployment benefits ran out a couple of weeks ago. Hey, Desiree, welcome back to the show. How are we doing today?
Thanks for having me back. Doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Good. Good, good, good. Hanging in here and trying to figure out if our lawmakers in Washington, well, one side seems to, you know, get the idea that there's a lot of hurt out there, but the other side, not the case. We often say they got their head in the sand. So we got the HEROES Act on one side and then the HEALS Act on the other. That's what the Republicans came up with. I would imagine you had a pretty good opportunity to check both out, and you're here to compare and contrast. What have you found so far?
Right. Thank you for asking me that, because as you know, talks have stalled out. But I think it's important to take a few steps back to see what happened and why they stalled out. The HEROES and the HEALS Act are very different creatures. So after months of stalling, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell released a fourth COVID relief package. And in this package, there's several things that I wanted to highlight for you today. So you started with the unemployment insurance, and that's one area that the HEALS Act and the HEROES Act are very far apart. The HEROES Act would extend the pandemic unemployment insurance benefits to $600 that many workers have received. We have about 30 million workers are currently receiving unemployment insurance. And so it would continue those benefits, which expired at the end of July through January 2021. The HEALS Act, on the other hand, would only provide pandemic insurance. It would only be $200 a week rather than the $600 a week. And then eventually it would also become the cap, you know, states would have the responsibility to provide benefits equal to 70% of the previous wages. And so this is really one of the downsides of the HEALS Act, is that it doesn't meet the needs of working families who are out of a job. There's a bunch of other things that I'm happy to go through those as well. It doesn't have state and local government funding, the HEALS Act. No COBRA subsidies to help workers continue their employer-based health care coverage. And also, there's no OSHA emergency temporary standard in the HEALS Act. Some of the things that are in it, in the HEALS Act, it has corporate meals and entertainment tax breaks. So instead of protecting workers, it includes an expanded tax break for businesses that are providing meals and entertainment for wealthy clients.
Oh, boy.
One of the things that I think has often gone unnoticed with the HEALS Act, but we need to really shine a bright spotlight on it, is the inclusion of the Trust Act. And this actually had bipartisan support. And basically, it would threaten Social Security, Medicare, and infrastructure by creating these committees who would be charged with developing proposals to restructure Medicare, Social Security, and the Highway Trust Fund. And basically, these proposals would happen behind closed doors, and they'd be fast-tracked. So basically, Retirement security would be put on the line, and funding for our nation's roads, bridges, infrastructure would also be determined behind closed doors. So this is something that is also very alarming that was slipped into the HEALS Act. And then education. Yeah. And then education funding. So they're tying a reopening schools as a condition to receiving funding. So those are some of the top lines of the HEALS Act.
Desiree, they seem to be going out of their way to dismantle the social programs, especially Social Security and Medicare, because you just mentioned this Trust Act, which shouldn't be called trust, anything but. You have that, and then you couple that with the payroll tax cut that Trump said he will make permanent if he gets reelected. In your opinion, right, is that gonna be the end of Social Security if this happens?
It could be. So if you rewind the clock to the campaign trail when President Trump was running, you'll remember he said that he would not touch Medicare and Social Security. But
right,
that has now been long forgotten, and the promises are not being met. And so at first, over the last couple of months, he signaled in interviews that he was open to cutting entitlement programs. And entitlement programs is just another word for Medicare and Social Security. So for those out there who aren't into the DC lingo, the reality is that's what he means. And now it's becoming less, now it's not implicit, it's actually direct and blatant what the goal is, like you just mentioned. With the payroll tax cut, which was one of the four executive orders that takes us to now, because of how negotiations have fallen through the cracks, President Trump over the weekend issued four executive orders to get through the pandemic. And one of them was a payroll tax cut. And the payroll tax cut, which basically funds Medicare and Social Security. So you're
right,
exactly right. That, you know, these are things that are very dangerous for these programs down the road.
You know, what's interesting, you mentioned in the HEALS Act, there's nothing for state and local governments, no funding for them. Did I hear that correctly?
You heard it correct. So as you know, the HEROES Act contains $1 trillion for state and local government funding. And the reason for that significant number, and it's justified, is because state and local governments are experiencing revenue crashes. They're in the red, and their services, their request for services is going up. So the Democrats have really, you know, made sure to include enough funding in there for states who are responding to the COVID crisis. Republicans, on the other hand, have said that state and local governments have enough aid right now. And so one of the biggest things that's happening right now is after Trump issued these executive orders, Democrats and Republican leadership are trying to come back together to discuss how to move forward. In a recent joint press release from Pelosi and Schumer, they basically said they're willing to move from their $3 trillion HEROES Act package down $1 trillion if the Republicans move up $1 trillion. So their idea is that they would include $1 trillion for the next COVID package. So basically they would need to meet in the middle, so somewhere
around
the $2 trillion mark.
Yeah, which is the way things usually work out. There's compromise on both sides. This isn't happening, though. You know what's interesting to me? When you said they're going to cut or not help out state and local governments, I'm thinking you've heard of this campaign about defunding the police, that they're laying this on the Democrats. Well, in a sense, the Republicans, by not helping state and local governments, they are defunding the police and fire and anybody that's a first responder, right? Am I seeing this correctly here?
I haven't thought of it that way, but yeah, I mean, basically, if you're not funding state and local governments, they're not going to be able to fund vital services, everything from trash to state and local jobs.
Yeah,
you're right. And instead, in the HEALS Act, as you know, instead of having
OSHA or Emergency Temporary Standard, for example, they want to have limited liability protection. So basically, it would limit lawsuits for the next 5 years.
Right.
If workers and others get exposed to COVID.
Yeah. So if you get sick on the job, you have no recourse because your employer has protections against that in any
right.
kind of court. Wow. One other issue here, too, which scares me, the Postal Service, as you know, there's been, I don't know if you've been following this, but apparently there's a new guy in charge. They cut overtime. Mail's been slowed down as a result. And now the HEROES Act has $25 billion. HEALS Act, nothing for the Postal Service. Is that correct?
That's correct. And I'm glad you raised that because we are hearing from a lot of our members, especially retirees. And they have said, hey, I'm not getting my Express Scripts, my prescription drugs on time. And it's not
right.
because of Express Scripts. It's because of what the new Postmaster General and his agenda is. And they believe it's, teeing it up for the election and mail-in ballots. And then the mail has been slowed down. We have been advocating for more money for the post office when more Americans are turning to it during the crisis. People are staying home. They're getting stuff delivered. We need to help our post office workers and our mail carriers.
And think about getting a bill late. You might get a finance charge if it's not delivered on time. I mean, there's so many things at play right now. It's sad. It's scary. I mean, there's so many different views of this right now. And again, when you take a look at this whole thing, the two sides just don't seem to talk. All right, you've been through this before. What do you see happening here? I mean, eventually something's got to crack. Do people have to be, sleeping on the streets here before they wake up and do something? Because we're headed in that direction. You know that.
So basically, I think that the biggest thing that's going to happen next is negotiations are going to continue, and we may not see anything until after the August recess, perhaps at Labor Day when Congress gets back. If there's a breakthrough, Leader Pelosi, Senate Leader McConnell will ask members to come back and vote on a negotiated package, but I don't see that happening for another couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. Crazy times, no doubt about that. Crazy times. Anything else there you want to cover? We got about a minute left here. I just want to make sure that you get the appropriate time to get your message out. Anything you want to call attention to right now?
Well, what I would say is at the beginning, you mentioned all the great work that our union members are doing in response to the COVID crisis. And I've talked to a nurse in Ohio who basically said that, she's reusing personal protective equipment over and over again. And in the past, things would have been disposed of after each patient. And now she's being required, because they lack PPE, to wear it over and over again. She's only been tested once since she's been back on the job. So she has no idea she's even carrying, is it asymptomatic and carrying COVID. So I think, the reality is workers across the country are putting themselves on the line every day, and we still don't have a coordinated federal response to date to address the crisis. The U.S. now is number one in the world in terms of COVID cases. We've surpassed 5 million cases. I think it's like 5.6, 160,000 deaths. We have outranked every country in the world in terms of the number of COVID cases, Brazil, India, Russia, you name it. And so we are really at a crossroads and we need real leadership. And it's really, we shouldn't have gotten to this point. There's a lot of things that could have been prevented. And now we're here.
Well said. Desiree, you stay safe. Keep up the fight. Hopefully we'll have some better news to report on next month, okay?
Great. Thank you so much.
That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the latest from the progressive populace and labor lawyer Joyce Goldstein. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. And be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.